come to order. I guess we have a couple of new people here, so let's go ahead and introduce ourselves. So we'll start up here with Danielle.
Yes, Danielle Cowley, Parks and Lands Division with the county.
John.
John Schaefer with the Railroad Board.
Daniel Weaver, the chair of the board.
Dave Rowe, Railroad Advisory Board.
Terry Gardner, Tom Yackel.
Jim McCraig, citizen.
Marvin Matheson, landowner at Hoban.
Michael O'Connell, former landowner near Marvin, and private person intensely interested in the potential that we have for this railroad and getting it right and the opportunity it entails. That's why I'm here, and hopefully we'll see some useful things happen.
Jim Pearson, Railroad Advisory Board.
John Hanson, Railroad Advisory Board.
Jim Malinowski, Railroad Advisory Board.
Neil Chambers, Railroad Advisory Board.
Carol Mevenin, Clark County Citizens United.
Welcome. Okay, has everyone read the minutes?
Yep.
Do I hear a motion?
I make a motion to approve the minutes as written.
A second.
Anybody opposed to the minutes as written?
Who's second, by the way? Who's second?
I did.
Oh, perfect, okay.
Okay, we'll accept the minutes as no objections. I have no particular comments. We have a guest here today that we'll hear from later on. Carol, and you have some other people coming?
Yeah, Susan and Fred Green.
Okay. So let's hear from, I guess, BYCX. We have no one here from PVJR, so let's hear from BYCX.
They're not here.
Okay.
Nate's online there.
Nate is online.
Nate.
Oh, Nate is on for PVJR.
Yep.
Hello.
Sorry.
I heard my name.
Do you want to give us a report?
I don't have any official report from BYCX. I'm just one of the volunteers. I guess our president didn't make it out today.
Okay. So how about county activities?
Sure. So I'm filling in for Kevin. I'll tell you some of the updates. The bridge repairs contract railworks will begin mobilization on September 13th with construction work starting the following week. They plan to start with working 10-hour days Monday through Saturday. The in water work window has been extended till October 15th. Number two, the railroad roadbed rehabilitation contract. There is no updates at this time to share. Dave Rowe is now our newest appointed member of the Railroad Advisory Board, so welcome.
Thank you.
As of 8:27, Terry Gardner, Dave Myler, and Jerry Jacobs should be on the September 17th agenda with council for approval. And then there's something called the OPMA training. So once all new members are appointed, Kevin will send around an open Public Meetings Act training for each of the new members. And that is all we have related to the county business. Yes.
How long is that training good for? Do we have to redo it every so often?
I'm not sure I know that answer. Okay. I thought it was every year. I could be wrong.
No.
No. It's not. It's not every year, but they periodically ask for it to be.
Yeah. I can check on that, and I'll let you know.
I've done it for 3 or 4 different organizations because they don't have the records from the other organization.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about the, I don't even have a note on this. Did anyone read the, or look at the council information? Can you give us a report on that, somebody? Either one of you.
So they were talking about the overlay, and they didn't really get into the much about it, except for they've all agreed to have public hearings on whether to keep the overlay or to fight the Growth Management Act. The Growth Management Act has pushed back on that overlay for the rocks up at Chalachi Prairie. So, and some of the people are wanting to have a public meeting in order to defend their decision to fight the Growth Management Act on their decision. So, soon I guess we'll hear about how when they're going to have their meeting. So.
Do you have anything else to?
Let's see.
Since you're a rock man.
A couple of things. The county said councilors said they thought they were in compliance because when they filed the lawsuit, they got a stay of proceedings from the Growth Management Board, and they thought that stay was a stay on everything. And but apparently the stay said it stayed everything except their position on the non-compliance list with Growth Management. And if you're on a non-compliance list, you're ineligible for grants and low-interest loans and those type of things. So they kind of straightened that out.
So they are in compliance now or not?
No, they're not.
Oh, okay.
Although the Cook, what's her name?
Chris Cook,
she brought up a good point in favor of not having an EIS, in that when you're at the permit process, you know, what you're doing, you're going to be required to do. And so they studied on the EIS. Under the overlay, there's nothing binding on the property.
Right.
So one of the reasons why the Growth Management Board wants them to do an EIS is that normally a property owner goes in and says, I'd like to have my property under the surface mining overlay because there's rock on it. And, well, what are you going to do with it? Well, I don't know. Nobody has any interest, but I know there's rock. I want to be on the overlay. So there's nothing to study. In this case, Granite came in and said, we're going to move 3 million tons a year, and here's a drawing of the rock crusher, and we're going to put it on the rails, and all this stuff. So the Growth Management Board said, you got a lot of stuff here you need to study. You need an EIS. And Chris Cook said, they gave us a lot of stuff, but none of it's binding on them. They could come back tomorrow and say, no, we changed our mind, we don't have to do anything. It isn't like an EIS for an actual permit.
Right, okay.
And that's why the county decided they didn't need to do an EIS, because it's still fluid what's out there.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty good point. So, and they may prevail if they take it all the way through the appeals court. But in the meantime, they're on the naughty list, and so no grants, no low cost interest loan, and it could be a year or two before they actually get a decision from the appeals court.
Yeah, so they even get a court date.
Yeah. So they're kind of in a rock, between a rock and a hard place on that.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Do we have any feeling about how their council's going to come down on it?
Oh, I'm sure they're going to rescind the ordinance. And if they don't, the new council will. Because the only two that are really in favor of keeping it are Megavie and Karen Bowerman. And they're going to be gone.
Well, where are we going to get rock for the county? You know, I've lived across from the Courtney pit for 50 years with no problems. And that pit has produced wonderful rock for around the county. and we need that. Where does the county council expect to get rock?
You know, the English Pit's turning into an HP site, and the Fisher Quarry's turning into a big fancy high-rise development. But right now, a lot of the most of the concrete rocks either coming from Boardman or from Scappoose.
Do people understand what's costing the developers and costing the people that are doing that, bringing that stuff way in?
They don't care.
They don't care what it costs?
And they don't care about the energy requirements to do that versus
the waste of energy?
If you talk to people about that, they'll say, that's going to be paid for, that new people moving here to buy new houses.
So here's an issue, though, that they're not thinking about. Because my brother was the superintendent of the building, some 18,000 kids up by Puyallup. They had a rock quarry close by. All the other school districts were suffering because they had a whole rock in from a distance. It cost them a ton of dough to build. He was getting stuff built cheaper. So, and with the school districts in trouble financially right now in this area, they got to think long term what's costing them in their pocketbooks.
Did it for 40 years. I got a wall out back you can talk to. It's the same thing. Yes.
You'd like to think our elected officials think about these things.
Some do.
Well, the elected officials may think about it and may have the information, but the general public, I mean, if you start doing it, then they're all over your back. So it's educating the public on these things is tough, first of all.
I think Carol will back me up. I think the majority of my neighbors would like to see that development in North County. It means jobs. It means help support for the school. And I think ignoring that is really irresponsible.
Did you read the article about Dave McDonald the other day?
No.
He's an attorney.
I know who he is.
Okay. Big article about him, and a lot of the guys talking about what a great guy he is and how he's saving us. We're from Shalashi Prairie.
Well, Dave's a nice guy, but I don't agree with him on that subject.
Yeah, Dave and I are friends, and we fight and argue all the time.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that what he's advocating is the best thing for the county.
Well, I mean, that's true about everything. I mean, the development that we propose is very good for the county, but, you know, people don't want it. I mean, it's like you said, they buy a house and they settle here, and it's too bad. Anybody else coming has to pay for it.
You say people don't want it. Is it the majority or a select few that are the loudest that talk about it, and the general public doesn't understand it?
Well, certainly the vociferous group, whether it's the majority or the minority, really doesn't matter because the rest of them don't get involved in it. So that's all you hear from. Because if you're okay with it, you probably don't have a group that gets too excited about it. But if you're against it, you can get a small group and make a lot of noise.
Correct.
So you don't know whether it's the majority or not until it actually comes up for a vote, or your elected officials get voted out of office and get some new ones in that will agree with the people who argue the most about it.
Normally, you're talking about a small group that can get a lot of people riled up, and if you convince them that it's not a bad deal, you know, very rarely will they turn around and support you. They'll just be quiet. And that's about the best you can hope for.
Well, the sad thing is the county has an asset that could be lost.
The county has lots of assets that they're not taking advantage of. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing is, if you talk to, you know, guys like Dave McDonald, we've had this, the discussion in that article, he even brings it up. You know, their big deal is no net loss of farmland in Clark County. So you have a growing population base, and you have a big farm base.
There's no good farmland up where I live. There's nobody makes a living up there farming. There are hobby farms.
Yeah, but I mean, you know,
it's not commercial agriculture anywhere, and except Fargo Lake. Fargo Lake's the one exception of commercial agriculture.
Well, when we were in a hearing with the council, you know, on Lagler's property, where he grows his feed, you know, when we were doing the industrial land bank, the county did a big study on the productivity of farmland in Clark County, and they found that some of the least productive farmland in Clark County was Dennis Lagler's property. And I brought that up at the hearing, and Sue Marshall dropped down my neck like, oh, man. So, yeah, it's...
The people who are advocating that are pretending that it's good farmland. It's not. And I don't know why county government should continue to push that fiction. The good farmland's already under houses, most of the good farmland.
We used to make that argument about gravel. You know, once you build a subdivision over gravel, you're never getting it back.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, you know, I had one guy that said, if they build a, you know, something you don't like next door, the first thing you become is an environmentalist. No, it's, you know, nobody says, I don't want that in my backyard. You know, just like when they wanted to put in a concrete plant in out there by, what do they call that area?
Barberton.
This whole thing about all this horrible dust that, you know, is on the rock, and it's, you know, it crushed rock, and it caused all the rock used in concrete in Clark County is washed. There's not a speck of dust on it. And it was just a big red herring, and it got lots of play in the paper, and they just walked away. You know.
Well, it'll be a sad day if they let that railroad go. You know, all the evidence is that we've got to build up a rail system, not tear them down.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's what we've been doing all these years, but... Yeah. You know, it's a tough row to hoe, and our buddy Eric Temple hasn't helped us much.
He hasn't what?
Hasn't helped us much.
Yeah, he's.
I would argue that yes, he hasn't helped, but the county hasn't treated him very well either. They've made promises and they didn't deliver.
Like what?
In terms of rezoning and building business. You know, one of the complaints is they're not getting enough traffic. Well, they're not getting enough traffic because the county is not letting commercial development occur along the railroad.
Well, they were going full speed on 5517 till he started the stuff that he's doing.
He hurts him. I'll agree. He hurts himself.
Yeah. So.
Well, the same thing was said. Apparently there was agreement, and I don't know if it ever got in a written agreement, and I don't believe it did, but when they signed the contract originally, they were supposed to help develop that property in Brush Prairie around Lagler and all that area for him to have industrial property, and that has never happened. I mean, we've gone through a couple of episodes of trying, but it has not happened at this point, so... I agree with you. They haven't developed. They haven't provided him with the industrial property to, you know, build a viable railroad that's going to pay the county money for the railroad. And in addition to that, the county doesn't seem to want to realize that the money's going to come from the property tax base as opposed to from the cars. Based on even the new revised agreement, doesn't pay them very much. On a per car basis to make a lot of money on it. The money comes from converting that ag land or forest land or whatever it is into industrial property, and the property tax basis goes skyrocketing.
And then it also provides jobs.
Jobs, and, exactly, yeah.
And so that people don't have to commute to Portland.
But I think, you know, to give the county some credit, you know, the industrial land bank, you know, the county came in and they paid for the whole environmental impact statement. You know, they put on the open houses. They, you know, Dennis didn't have to do too much. He put some money into it, but not a ton. like the county did, and they took it, and they took it all the way to the growth management board, and they lost. You know, so you know they put their effort into that, and you know, same thing goes with, you know, 55-17. They were putting all the effort into it, and then boom, you know, everything blew up.
So anyway, there, back to the rock issue. They're going to take public comment at this point. Is that what I understand?
They're going to have a public hearing, and I wasn't too sure about, is a public hearing going to be to reopen the whole thing again, or is it going to be about just rescinding that one little paragraph?
I couldn't tell what the outcome will be. But they said they're going to be putting the notice, the 15-day notice out, like...
The 17th?
Well, shortly, so...
Yeah.
Who's the notice going out to?
Public notice.
Public notice.
For me, you got to have 2-week notice of the hearing.
Yeah, so it goes out... So it's just posted on their website, or what? Where does it go? Is it get
it gets published in the paper. But... And I mean, they may give them another bite of the apple and give them an opportunity to say, "Hey, we were just saying that this is what it could be, and you know, we'll take all that stuff off the table, and we just want to have rock." You give them another bite of the apple.
One of the things I don't understand about the Growth Management Act's rulings is that there's part of the act that wants to encourage resource development like rock.
Mm-hmm.
There's a provision in the.
Mm-hmm.
And if they rule against it, they're basically ignoring that provision of the Growth Management Act.
They're not ruling against that. They're just saying you didn't follow the procedures to do it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They put the cart a little bit before the horse when they said what they're going to do with that. Mm-hmm. Instead of just saying we wanted a rock overlay, they put all those parameters around saying what they're going to do, looking like they're applying for a permit. And that's probably what got hung up with the growth management.
They should have fired their attorney the second he proposed that.
Who did it for him?
Hmm?
Who did it for him?
Jamie House.
Jamie House. All right. Anything else on that? Okay, let's jump to the railroad presentation and open house. I think we're going to probably put a hold on it at this point in time, but we still need to keep accumulating the information. But I want to... We have to this date, in my mind, I know you've hollered about it, but to this point, we've sort of ignored North County and the benefits that are going to be derived from property up there and the development around the railroad. But I think we need to look at that and put this in as, and I don't know whether it's an alternative to or an addition to what we would like to do in the Brush Prairie area. But I don't know enough about it to make that kind of decision, so I think it's important that we move in that direction and learn about it. You've given us some information, and that's why I invited Carol and her group to come and tell us a little bit more about it, and then hopefully move into a more fact-finding session that we can deal with some of the properties in Murray County. So, Carol, do you want to start and give us a thumbnail?
This is Susan Rasmussen.
I'm not asking you to give us a full-blown presentation, but at least educate us to some extent what's going on in North County with respect to the properties and as it relates to the railroad.
I can move the microphone.
Can't move them.
There are, back in 1994, we have to go back to there because that's where you got this comprehensive plan and you got to go
back. Why don't you come up and take my chair?
Yeah, so the mic can pick it up.
Oh.
Otherwise, community members can't hear.
Well, here with two.
Susan, you can sit here. Sit here.
Do you have a mic over there?
Yeah, well, it's right here, but it'll catch it. Catch it. Just to talk about it.
We have to kind of go back to 1994 when the Growth Management Act first was, when it was adopted, and we have our first comprehensive plan of the 1994. And at that time, there was the rural centers. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but that's Hawkinson. I think Fargo Lake is a rural center. There was 13 rural centers. One of them was Hyson, and there were some other locations too. They all had post offices. They all had commercial development and so forth. Now, rural centers are supposed to be the commercial hub for rural people. And so they're supposed to be providing for the commercial type development that's needed for the rural people in those general areas. Well, John Karpinski, an environmental attorney, informed the county that they had to take all the rural centers out. And so we took that to court in 1995 or six, and we won in court to get the rural centers back. But they didn't give back half of them. And one of them was Hyson. And there were some others too, but they're almost all of them along the railroad. So, you know, we believe Hyson should go back into the rural centers. But that in Hawkinson and all these places, well, they can provide commercial development there for people. So now Hyson has 410 acres of right on the railroad. And when we were looking at, we were just on it, Susan and I were just looking on GIS today, and all the way to the Sachi Prairie, there are hundreds of acres that are right next to the railroad. They don't have to have a, you know, 500 feet, 1,000 or a mile or whatever from the railroad. They're right on the railroad. And it runs diagonally through the county, so there's very little impact to landowners or to people. I mean, there's one, but we've got three landowners who did not sell their easement to the county. And they are insistent that only a rail service will they allow to go by. Otherwise, they have reversionary deeds, and that property goes back to them.
If the railroad is abandoned.
If the railroad is abandoned, yes, or if it's not used.
Do you know who they are?
Yeah, I do.
Bob Summerall, one of them?
I don't recognize that name.
He is one. I know that's one of his problems, is that he don't want to give up his property, goes back to his grandfather.
Yes.
Way back.
So. Yeah.
He would be another one.
Yeah. So, and I don't know if these landowners would want us to say their names, but one of them, half of his land just got put in the urban growth boundary of Battleground. So, but back in 2008, the county decided that they were going to abandon the railroad and they were going to put a trail in there.
When?
The Rails to Trails.
Rails to Trails was in 2008.
Well, the Rails to Trails decided that, but nobody else did.
That's what.
Yes.
Right.
I was going to say, at that point in time, they thought they owned the county, I think.
Yeah, and I remember one of the landowners that had, a long, long, he was right up against the railroad, and they had that letter, and I asked him, he sold it for like $2,000, and it was like 3.5 acres of his land. I said, well, why did you, he says, well, the way the letter read, I thought they were threatening to file, what do you call it?
Eminent domain.
Yeah, eminent domain. So he figured he'd take the money, you know. That's what happened with a lot of these folks. He had a reversionary deed. So, but they got federal funds, supposedly to improve the rail. Then they got state park funds to tear the rails out. So the county has collected maybe $3 million or something like that for what they have today. So they're kind of in a pickle because in 2008 they did all of this activity for this. And if you look on the county website, you will find that they are still planning on doing the 33 miles of trail. So, not to say there aren't some areas.
That's when they put out that booklet for that had the plan for the entire rail line of trails. And then they start that, and then they got that 1 mile around.
Yeah, that was $1 million mile.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it cost $1 million.
I know Tom Mielke hit the roof when he found out it cost $1 million to do that.
Yeah, and there's all that wetland they got. I mean, the cost to the county would be absolutely horrendous to try to put a trail through there. Plus, easements are only like 50 feet in some places, and then they're wider. And then Eric Temple told us that he would, his liability would be too great to use it as a trail. So,
but not only that, since then there was that lawsuit out of Oregon. I believe it was Yamhill County, and it was the same rails to trail federal system that they were in, that they were going to move ahead with. Well, this county had a lot of orchardists and farmers that the trail system would pass through their land, and people started using the trail system. They started using their fields as toilets, and they were in garbage bins. They were trespassing all over. And then certain times of the year, the orchardists, especially the filberts, had to be sprayed. Well, then the people were up in arms about the spray, and then the orchardists were up in arms that they had to spray. Their crops were dependent on it, so they took them to court. And they won. They got their the trails taken off. And I'm not sure exactly. This has been a couple of years since I looked at that. But the landowners prevailed in Yamhill County over that suit. And I think it happened again in one other Oregon county.
But they did. They are using their short line rails for rail use. Those areas. They did develop it for that use. Here in Clark County, a lot of that railroad goes through timberland. It's zone forest, it's not zone ag. Very little of it. Well, back to the zoning. They, in order for the county to zone the land, agriculture and forest, they didn't use the criteria the GMA says to use. They used an aerial photo and staff interpretation. And we have the data, we have the metadata that proves that. So we asked the GIS to give us a map of class 1, 2, 3, because after class 3, the USDA says you really can't do much in the way of farming if you're going to do commercial farming. So we, 1, 2, 3, we told them to make us a map of those locations. And the ag land was all under Hazeldale, Vancouver. And the Hillsborough loan, or excuse me, that's Hillsborough loan, and a whole bunch on Highway SR 503. And then the other was Cinnabar loam, which it says on page 8 for forest that that's the prime soil for the Douglas fir. And it prefers other things too. So that, almost all of that is owned by either the state or Weyerhaeuser. And that's all in the northeast corner of the county. So we presented those maps. And the map maker got fired. He was there, GIS, 20 years. And when we presented that metadata and those maps, unfortunately, he got fired. And another one got fired, too, that they thought helped us.
And the metadata disappeared off of their website.
Yeah, off of their website. You can't find it, but we have a copy of it.
When was that?
2015?
For the 2016 comprehensive plan. That was the information they were giving us. Yeah. So as far as the railroad goes, if you go back into the...
let me make sure I understand. Then that any land in between there is something less desirable for farming or forestry.
Well, it really is, yes. And if you go back to the 1930 records on farming in Clark County from the USDA records, I don't know if Susan is, but we are one of the people that have to report to the USDA thing, reporting for what's out there now. But they say in their study is that the majority of the farmland, the commercial farmland at that time, were 2 to 10 acres. The reason is it was all what we call truck farming. And the only ones that had large parcels were the dairy farms that had to use the pasture and make their hay, and the cattle farms. Well, we have very few cattle farms left anymore. But the dairy farms. And when we started in 1994, that's when we started all this, there were 39 dairies, and now there's 2. So, and one of them wants to get out of the area. So,
say yeah. Lagler, yeah.
Yeah, but they still say, claim that dairy farming is part of the rural character of Clark County.
Well, but
it has to be profitable, and you need to be by dairies. I was in agriculture my whole life.
Yeah.
So, to put that, have dairy farms there, and then truck the milk, get the feed product, it, all of a sudden, the numbers don't match up. Because the margins.
Yeah.
He is maxed out there. I mean, I've talked to him a number of times, but I mean, he was essentially providing for 4 families there, his 2 sons and himself, and then his ex-wife. And he is maxed out in terms of property there. He can't expand any further, and he needs to move to a place where he can get more property and and produce more for his dairy farm. So, plus the fact is that is not Class A or number one class farmland anyway.
He has a little bit of Hillsboro up on the end, the north end of that is where he's got his alfalfa right now, but the rest of it's not. A lot of gravel under that. One of the engineers on our board said that lots of gravel underneath that farm. And Alan Schumacher, I don't know if you folks know him, but he used to help Lagler farm in the right season, because he said a lot of that land is kind of wet and soft, and you can't get equipment in there on the east side of the farm. So it's not what you would call a real commercial farm. He's making a living of it because he knows how to do it, but you got to have a farmer. You know, that's what they keep forgetting. You can save all the farmland you want, but you got to have a farm.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I've been to a number of those homeowner meetings that are saying, oh, yeah, people want these, you know, like 2 acres, 5 acres, 10 acres. You can't do anything with that, and you might be able to grow enough vegetables to feed yourself during the summertime, but you can't grow much of anything for a cash crop on that little amount of acreage that's going to support you, that's for sure.
Unless you're a berry farmer or a fruit farmer or something like that. I was raised in the McCann, well, we used to call it the McCann Road. And we had a truck farm. We shipped walnuts, filberts, and pears. And that all the prune orchards were all there, the prune dryers, you know, and that whole area was just all orchard and produce. But my dad, he wouldn't allow one animal on the property because it took up too much land.
Right.
You know, I mean, you put in tents. That stuff's intense. And it's commercial. But in Clark County, and it all dried up when the processing plants moved out. So, like Denton Erickson, he has lots of smaller parcels that he made his farm with, and even Helen said that, well, I would never combine it all, even though they've got a lot of acreage now, because you lose your property rights to it. But they were small parcels. They just collected over time and bought from their adjacent properties. But when you're shipping strawberries, you can't go miles. It ruins the whole, you know, your whole harvest.
Trust me, I was a strawberry farmer.
Oh, yeah. So that's, you know, my dad sold out our farm because, you know, you couldn't ship pears. There wasn't, and you know, it was all you pick stuff, and, you know, so that it all went away. But these young people in 4-H and FFA and some of those, they can. My daughter's raising horses on a 5-acre piece of property that she is, she's in a perfect example of management, and she's got some really nice horses there. So the horse community can easily manage if you cross fence and so forth and so on. So the farming really that we have in Clark County is more private farming. What would you call it, Susan?
Hobby farming,
yes, hobby, but they make money on it. I mean, these horses are worth...
But do they make enough money to live on?
They are commercial.
I mean, do they have jobs outside of that?
It's always been, even the 1930s report, has always been that they had to work out.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, always.
Since my parents worked out because they couldn't make enough off the strawberry farm.
Right. And my dad, what he did extra, besides the farming, is on the weekends, he'd go around for Bauer Trucking and collect all the milk at the dairies.
Here's another thing that's going to develop, and since that was my job, agriculture, and I've worked with fairly large dairies and poultry and that. Some of these, I call them hobby farmers, that's what we call them in the Midwest, the 4 or 5 acre, 10 acre farms. And they raise chickens, they sell it on the, you know, the people, you know, by the dozen. The problem is the avian flu that's coming across. It's jumped the barrier to humans now. You know, it's been in chickens. I remember when it first hit the U.S., because I had a customer of mine, he had to put down 7 million birds. He said it was coming in from wildfowl. That's exactly what happened. He was a trained person on that. It's jumped. It's gone into the area herds now. There's a first reported case that somebody got the avian flu, and they said they didn't have an animal contract. So there's a problem with some of this stuff.
People selling it around.
That it could be happening, and people don't understand it quite
here,
yet.
Sure. That's a concern. I can see.
I've told some of my wife's friends that have chickens, I said, be very careful. Because you have the flyway here.
Right. A lot of geese.
Yeah.
So are there property owners along the railroad that you're aware of that really would like to sell their property to be developed from an industrial standpoint for use of the railroad?
Yeah. I recognize as we were going down the 33 miles of the railroad, many people with large parcels. See, they got downzoned so badly in 1994, they can't do anything with their land. So they're stuck with that land.
Well, you mean they can't subdivide it and sell it on?
Right. They can't make any money on their land. I mean, when you buy land, especially large land, you figure it's an investment.
Right.
And they lost, millions of dollars these folks lost in development. But the overlay, I mean, the GMA clearly says that they have to preserve the resource lands, which is agriculture, forest, and mining. So they have to preserve mining. And they don't say, well, first you preserve ag, and then you preserve forest, and then maybe mining. They're equal. All of those resources are equal. So what the county has done always in the past is if they know that there's rock under someone's land or something, they will put a mining overlay on it, no matter what it's zoned. It could be zone ag, zone forest, it could be zone rural. Now, one of the big contractors told us that what's happening is that staff is changing that map all the time, so they never know. They never know where the rock is, or, you know, because the map keeps changing. He was complaining about that. But the prime rock in Clark County is at Chalapti Prairie. And three quarters of it is surrounded by Weyerhaeuser, who's not going to get rid of their land. They have a rotation of 20 years. They've got prime hills, or prime cinnabar loam soil, and they're not going to get rid of it anytime soon. So you've got that, and then you have the other piece of property that's on the west of them that's owned by a construction company, and you've got the land that that Granite has purchased. I think it's like 300 acres or something like that. And then there's another landowner who's a member of CCU, and he owns the land there, I'm sure, because those folks have complained bitterly about what the county did to them. So, I mean, it is the ideal place in the whole county. But we have, in fact, Fred Pickering was supposed to be here. I don't know what happened. Something must have happened. He said he'd come. But he would be representing the timber industry because my last name, Levinen, and maybe you're familiar with it, the Levinens are timber people. They harvest and plant and have plantations all around in different places. But they're complaining that there's no sawmills that they can go to, and they have to truck so far, and now there's all these precautions, these restrictions on the roads for their log trucks. They're having a hard time getting them in and out, and they would love to have another processing plant somewhere. And they would love to be able to ship those logs so they don't have to deal with their trucks and everything on the road. On a railroad.
So where are they going? What road are they going on now?
Well, say for instance, we just harvested 5 acres, and we couldn't sell, even though we had poles, we couldn't sell them because the poles were too long for them to manipulate the road that they had to go down on from our place. So that was kind of
a loss. Could you put them on a rail car? I mean, can you get to a rail car?
Where we are?
Yeah.
The rail line is just downhill from us.
So you could have put them on a rail car then and sent them
sure,
out that way.
Sure. And that's what the timber industry is saying.
But you still have to have somebody there with a
You have
a
to
plant,
have somebody that puts it there.
Puts yeah. it on the plant. Puts it, plant. You know, puts it on the car.
Yeah.
I mean, you have,
yeah.
It's not just you harvesting them and rolling them down the hill for them to
yeah,
put
yeah.
on the car.
One thing that I would like to say personally, where we live, those trucks coming down Kelly Hill right now, they with that roundabout being put in, and by the way, the church didn't want it. They were protesting it, but the state did that.
Is that the one you wrote the letter to the county council about?
Maybe. I don't know. I write a lot of letters. but they're coming down Kelly. And my husband, well, that's the one where my husband almost got hit if he hadn't pulled
Yeah, that's the one you wrote the letter to the council.
Right, I did, yeah. He was coming down, he was honking his horn, my husband sees coming way too fast down that hill. They have a long haul after they get out of that pit, downhill, and it's steep hill. So, for instance, we were between where we live, it was just, I don't even know that it's a mile, maybe a mile and a half, and to the 503, there were 10 double-loaded trucks coming through. And one time I counted 16 at a time, back-to-back. And all the people living up in that area said it just ruined their lives because...
Well, you said your family's in the logging business. How have they been taking them out? They have to cut them in short
well,
lengths?
Well, this is gravel trucks,
yeah, but
yeah.
How do you get your lumber out now? I mean, your timber out.
Well, they
have to.
You
have to cut them in shorter lengths.
Yeah.
You right. can't sell the long poles.
Yeah, can't sell the poles depending upon where the restrictions are and how to get them out. Yeah. And that's because poles are like maybe $300 a thousand more.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're
needing poles.
Yeah. I mean,
Was it the roundabout that causes the problem for the poles to get out?
No, they didn't have that one week.
That's a poor engineering design. Because there's in the Midwest, there's some roundabouts that'll take triple axle or triple trailers. They're big enough to take big stuff. So if they were designed something like that, it ended up taking into account this poor design.
Yeah.
This roundabout though is a very small one. The hammer is the smallest I've ever seen.
Right. You've been the one in Le Center, in downtown Le Center. That thing is so small. It's
all
terrible.
Of them are. Personally, I don't.
The one in Le Center has bypasses on it. There's I was a councilman in Le Center for 10 years when that came in, and that's by there are restrictions, length restrictions.
I know they have to bypass and go around.
Yeah, you have
no. Yeah, trucks have to go around it, but. But if you're going inside that circle, it's pretty tight.
I drove tractor trailer for a couple of years, and I complained about when they designed it. Problem is they only had so much land. They bought that bank building just to get more land.
Yeah.
Now, it is a mess, but it's designed for a 53-foot trailer because there's a family up there, Mark Cord, who moves heavy equipment, and he ran trucks through there to test it for them.
Roundabouts and out toward the I-5 are a bit much larger than that one.
Yeah, there's more land out there. Yeah. Well, the tribe built those.
Yeah. But roundabouts are terrible for big trucking. Yeah.
Right, almost all of them are stored old trucks, but anyways, they're running downhill. You can hear them with their Jake brakes all day long.
So, roundabouts are hard even for a pusher bus, 55 passenger.
So, but back to the resource land, we advocate that of the small farms that are more produce farms, and they're talking about farmers markets and things like that, and so that's really the only kind of farmer you're going to be able to get because you can't afford the land otherwise here. I mean, I don't even know if young people can afford 2.5 and 5 acres, but it doesn't change the zone. The zone is still an ag zone. It just changes the parcel size.
I don't know if you got involved. I didn't see you at any of the meetings for the 5517, SB 5517.
Tell me about it.
That's the one with the railroad. It's designed specifically for railroad. You could use resource land for...
Oh, yes, this pipe.
Corridor.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we were involved with that.
But that's just like the gravel. It's an overlay on the property, and the county has to designate what that overlay is going to be to use the property, and that's what we were run up against. Is people didn't want that overlay out there big enough to take in the Lagler farm.
Right, I remember we were at meetings.
We went to those meetings.
Yeah, we went to those meetings.
Right. I remember seeing you at the Rural Industrial Land Bank meetings, but I don't remember.
When we were meeting over in Rush Prairie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, were they there? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
We were there. But the problem is, this is an overlay they've been using for a long time. Did they change the ordinance? I don't know if they changed the ordinance, but the mining overlay, they use that for... Stored all but 107 acres south of the Kelly Hill mine, and they came in and asked for an overlay. Nobody opposed that. They have the ability to get to the railroad. They have they have a road access that will go right over to the Yakult. CC Landon, yes. So.
Roads there, logging roads there, but it wouldn't take much to finish it.
Is your family still involved in the lumber? I mean, in the...
Oh, yeah.
So between them and the gravel, there's a pretty high demand for the ability to load...
Oh, absolutely.
Load gravel or handle.
I mean, they're telling us. I know, even talking with Fred, he's on our board, and he's a forestry consultant, and you know, he absolutely thinks that railroad needs to be used to help the timber industry too.
Okay, I mean, because you can do a loading facility just with one machine that picks them up and loads them on the rail cars. I mean, you don't have to have a major operation there to load the rail cars.
And the shipping for the trees, I mean, if they can be shipped out somewhere, then the potential for the gravel and the timber is huge if that railroad was operating. You know, the economic growth for those folks.
And then what about the other industry up there? Is there other...
Even Weyerhaeuser, have you talked to Weyerhaeuser about their ability to ship their trees out? Mm-hmm. because the trucks are all hauling to where, mostly hauling to Weyerhaeuser right now, Longview. Yeah.
So where do they go out?
Pardon?
Where do the trucks go out? What road do they take to get?
Well, it just depends on
Cedar Creek.
They probably cross over and go out on the pellet site down the.
Depends on where they're harvesting.
River.
You know.
Yeah, Yakko
and Amboy. Yeah. Just depends on yeah, what piece of property is being harvested. You know, in our area, right around the railroad, well, there's a. Fred owns timber too, and he said something about he could easily use the railroad to harvest, you know, to get rid of his trees rather than. And I know that the even in our family, he provides his own trucks. You know, he has his own fleet of trucks, and he said it's getting harder and harder for them to. They put road restrictions and, you know, all these different things. And he says, then we got to go all the way around, and it's costing them money with the fuel prices.
Well, it'd be cheaper to haul it by rail also, because you can get three times or four times as much on a rail car than you can on a truck. Right.
Yeah, I was talking to my son last night, and the limit the state imposes on the amount of rock you can haul. But 32 tons, that's a pup in a trailer.
How many?
32 tons is all that the state allows you to haul.
That's a pretty good load.
And, well, he said to put a truck in a trailer on the road is $145 an hour.
But the thing is that load is coming down Kelly Hill. And they've gone over Rock Creek Road and down over, and you probably see it in the paper, two or three times. Yeah. So,
I was permitted with conditions on it. And for whatever reason, they're not abiding by those conditions on when the trucks go up Kelly Hill and then down.
Yeah, they can go up empty, and they're not supposed to go down loaded. But they don't necessarily do that.
Nobody's holding them accountable to those.
So this is why I can't figure out why this Granite Construction, this is a national company, they're not going to be doing things that they don't think they couldn't legally do. And there would be able to provide, and the rock is similar to the rock by Jim's. One of the big construction companies told me, he said that's the best rock in the whole county, and it's hardly anyone living around it, so the impact to the people would be minimal. And all of the landowners want it. So I can't figure out why now, but it's Friends of Clark County who filed again into the hearings board, and then the county counter filed into the Court of Appeals. So
Carol, I would say not all of our neighbors. It's mostly newcomers that come from an urban environment, five acres, and don't want anything else to happen around them.
Yep, that's exactly what's happening.
I think the old timers, almost 100%. Want to see that development.
Right. The people that grew up there, or their families grew up there, they want to see that. It's mm-hmm. the people that are moving out. I don't want to hear that. I've lived next to the railroad my whole life. Do I go to the county and say, shut down the main line BN because I hear it every day? No.
We went to the parade of homes yesterday. These multi-million-dollar homes. And my husband was out in the backyard with the pool going, and they had spigots going into the pool. You could hear the water, and all of a sudden he heard the freight train in the background down the ravine going.
It's down
in next to million-dollar homes, multi-million.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of them down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Off of 14 down all the way out there.
All the 14, that's the main line BN.
Yeah, those people aren't complaining.
Those freight trains coming in there, and there's all those houses are over $1 million.
Yeah.
But you know what? I've lived against the main line BN from Kansas City to Minneapolis. I've lived here, and eventually you just it just blocks out, and then all the trains going by. You learn to.
Well, here's what I
the coal trains especially.
Here's what I suspicion is that it's only a handful of people that are giving these testimonies. Many of them have a van. I was looking back on the information. Many of them have a Vancouver address. And they're already running trains in Vancouver on that track to what, Battleground or somewhere. And we found out back in 1994, and I'm not saying this is happening now, but we found out that back in 1994 for the comprehensive plan, there was one man who was writing the testimony, and he passed it out to all these landowners and had them read the testimony as theirs. So he got caught. He was working for working as an EMS guy, and he was using their computers and their equipment to do this, and he got caught and he lost his job. But I mean, so I question whether or not these complaints are legitimate or not.
Well, keep in mind that also the county community planning department is anti-development of other than
yes.
natural look and houses.
But I'm hearing, you know, I've spoken to a couple of people whose jobs are dependent on in the building industry. Without a doubt, they're saying we need local rock, because they're starting to barge it in now. It's gotten so bad, and that is very expensive. And I'm just, what does that add on to the costs of building a road for development or the house?
Well, Inslee signed these bills for them to provide affordable housing, you know, jobs and affordable housing. And when that bill passed, Liz Pike's bill, and then it was for all short line railroads, and then Inslee vetoed that. So I think Wilson. Yeah, went back and lobbied him, and so the only ones that he signed on to was the Clark County Short Line and one in Eastern Washington.
Right. Okanagan County.
Yeah. But you read easily that it's for rural jobs, and who knows what rural jobs would be. You know, I think the folks that are fighting this and saying we don't want any loss of ag land don't understand that it could also help them if they develop ag land and find a way to process it and get it out on a rail line. You know, I mean, the potential is just unbelievable.
All right, let's talk a little bit about other types of industrial development that could go on out there. I mean, there's a fair amount of property that people, would they sell that property to do warehousing or other things out there, so light manufacturing?
Well, right now, like there's 180 acres that's for sale. The price just went down. They just reduced the price on it.
Well, Lightly will sell out, won't it?
Well, I'm talking about up there, above Battleground.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
North of Battleground?
All of the lands that we saw that we think are quite viable, all of those landowners we know.
And they touch the railroad.
And they, yes, they're on the railroad. And they're open land, open spaces, and prime for any kind of development that would want to go there. I mean, even Yakult. Now, Jim, is it true that they're going to ship that water from Kelly Hill over to Yakult?
Yes.
They're
yes.
going to do that.
Within a year.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So they have a Kelly... It's interesting.
The problem they've got is the wells that serve Yakult are becoming contaminated with fecal chloroform. They're just at the upper limit. But they've also found some chemicals that are being found around the state that are very persistent chemicals. And it must be from Weyerhaeuser's operation years ago that are in the water, that are now, there are limits being placed on them. So we really need to get off of those local wells and get water from the lowlands back up into the Yakult. So that's the reason we're pushing forward with that.
Right. Well, and then there would be public water, and Yakult has, I don't know if there's someone from Yakult here, but they
look at Eddie.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but we did a lot of research to find out whether or not Yakult was wanting to put a sewer system in, and they had applied twice or three times, and DOE approved it. Yeah, DOE approved it both times.
Yep.
Yeah, and I saw all the maps and all the plannings and all that stuff, and the county shot it down.
Or something happened to it. It didn't go. It didn't get traction. Well, so it just didn't go anyplace.
Do they have a treatment plant?
Pardon?
Are they going to have a treatment plant?
Well, yeah, it would be just like Battleground, I suppose.
Well, similar. Battleground ships theirs down to Salmon Creek, don't they?
Yeah, no. That's true. I don't know.
They have a big pipe that runs down to Salmon Creek.
But, you know, they talk, and the argument will come that if we allow any of this stuff to happen, all of our water is going to go away. I mean, we're all going to dry up. You know, our wells are going to be no good and so forth and so on. Well, I talked with Eric Beck. He was the engineer for the water department, and he gave me the whole manual from DOE when all these water people got together and created this manual. And he said, here, all the information's in here. I read the manual. Anyways, but the private wells are considered surface water. The big wells are tidal aquifer wells. So he said, Eric told me, he says, we'll never run out of water unless the ocean dries up. Because they feed the aquifers as it comes into the rivers each tide. So it's not private well stuff. I mean, it's and PUD is saying that they would provide water anywhere people want to provide water.
Where are they going to get? How are they going to bring the water in? By pipe?
We're putting pipelines to bring water in from the Columbia up into the uplands. It's an interesting thing. In other parts of the state, you've got the problem that the water supply is in the uplands. And anything you take out takes water away from the streams. This way, we're taking water at where it comes into the Columbia and pumping it uphill to serve the community. The problem you've got is we can't serve every rural property, and so you're still going to have private wells. We'll serve where we got enough concentration of people that you can economically provide service. And Yakult certainly is one of those. We serve Amboy, and I'm hoping that we'll continue to expand those service areas.
Where do you get it from the Columbia?
There's a new field down at the near where the East Fork goes into the Columbia. There's a brand new well field there, and then we get water down off Vancouver. Those are the two major sources.
So you pump it all the way up to pump it all the way up to Yakult. So you don't have a pipeline there now, right?
Well, there's a pipeline within 3 miles.
The Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the
Carol.
Kelly Hill.
I know about that line because we paid for it.
The neighborhood put that in.
We
got together and put it in themselves.
We put in 3.5 miles of main line, and gave the easements, and that's what they used to get up onto Kelly into that.
They got it done.
Each landowner paid a portion, and just where we live in that area, and we had it brought up from.
The beauty of it is that it means that we leave water in the stream and maintain the water levels in the streams. And the other thing I think people have to recognize is you can't provide water this way for agriculture. So anything we do in the county has got to be dryland agriculture. The idea that you can use PUD water for agriculture is foolish. The math doesn't work.
Alan Schumacher was a full-time farmer, and he put his kids through college and he was farming 210 acres, I believe it was, and he's passed away, and so is his wife. And that 210 acres, well, he also farmed others, you know, he rented from other people too. But he was a full-time farmer, but it's a dryland farm. He never, ever irrigated. And so he was confined to certain crops, and he did seed crops and hay crops. I don't know if there was anything else. But now that land, that abuts the Bay Road, that farm does. And the boys, last I talked to the boys, they saved 90 acres, and then they've divided up the land between them some. An engineer divided those land into 20-acre pieces and the big one. So they've done a cluster now on another piece of property across the street that they had. But those lands are still there. But that land and the 180-acre land and the other 100-acre land, I mean, that's 410 acres right there at the interchange.
Are you counting the Hanson property that's just south of there?
Yeah, and then just south of there is a bunch of Hanson property.
It abuts the railroad and the Schumacher farm.
But these properties are 80-acre zone, 40-acre zone. You know, they used to have 5-acre. Alan had a little bit of 5-acre on the roadway, but... I mean, Alan was on our board of directors, and he believed in what we were doing. So,
well, we need to, I guess, bring this to a close. Is there any way that it makes sense for us to get together and then get a better understanding of that property up there, and have you?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting that the staff. The staff can do just what we did. I mean, you go on GIS and follow the railroad and hit on the large parcels of land and get the landowner's name and.
Does your rail track go through it?
Does our rail track?
The land she's talking about. Does it go by it?
I don't know where the property is. Oh. But it depends.
She's talking up by Hyacinth.
Hyacinth, yeah. Our lease goes down to, well, a sublease from PBJR. We go to Hyacinth Store.
Right.
To that road crossing. That's the end of Chalachi Prairie's lease for a tourist operation.
Oh, I see.
Okay. I'm president of the tourist group.
Oh,
I see.
I think she's talking just west of Hyacinth Store, the property where they're building.
That's Alan's
farm.
But
the
90 acres has been preserved.
We looked at coming down, and it keeps every once in a while the idea pops up taking the tourist train to Heisen, but financially it doesn't work, you know, or going into Battleground.
So where would that train like to go if the whole 33 miles was there?
Well, it from a tourist perspective, we couldn't charge enough to make it worthwhile. Right now our ticket's $22. We go down to, we start at milepost 26.7, we go roughly to milepost 20, and that's a 2-hour ride. It fits people's schedule. If I went the whole 33 miles, it might be close to 6 hours, and little kids aren't going to tolerate that. Yeah. You know.
So as far as that being beyond that highest point, being developed, the rest of the rail line isn't really going to be detrimental to you.
No, it's beneficial because we have to maintain the track, the ties, the rails, and we got way too much gray hair in our group to do that. Ideally, you should be changing 10% of your ties a year. We can't even change 0.1%. We just don't have the physical. We're all volunteers.
Yeah.
And we don't have the resource to buy the ties. Nobody's going to, you know, if Eric was going to give us ties, that's a different thing. But if the commercial operation comes in, they'll have to maintain the tracks, and we'll be the benefactors of that, because that takes us out of the track business.
Yeah.
So we're all for it.
Oh, yeah. So there's not a conflict if there's a commercial train going
through? No, we've already, I've talked to Eric before, Eric Temple, and with just timetable. They basically run Monday through Friday, and we run Saturday and Sunday.
Right, you do. We hear you.
Yeah.
And it's It's fun to listen to a train.
Oh, it's really fun when we run steam, because that really, that makes, and that'll be back on the tracks next summer.
So, you know, everyone thinks about that track as being for you, you know, and that's, oh, they love that, but they don't want anything more. And I'm thinking, well, there's a limitation for you, and there's a cost, and a, and you know, it's to a point where someday you might not be able to be doing that.
Oh, yeah, we're not
popular. It'd be nice if you could.
We're at the mercy of whoever controls the track. You mentioned that the pump and a dump is 32 or 33 tons. When I talked to Eric, he was going to run 100-ton cars, which are shorter ore cars. Well, each car has 100-ton capacity, so that's three trucks. Every ore car is three trucks. So that's three trucks off the road. If he runs, he was talking 40 to 45 cars a day, one train up, one train down. You know, that's 120, 130, 40 trucks that aren't coming out of Healy Road on the 503, you know, in Chillatchee. Yeah. And that would just destroy that area up there, traffic-wise, those all those trucks.
Yeah. Well, you know, Kelly Road had to be rebuilt just for the, I mean, those are tax dollars.
Yeah, well, when I buy ballots from Stordal, I have to take 33 tons. I can't take 10 tons or 15 tons. I have to take 33. Because they're limited how many trucks they can run.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to wrap this up. And I'm just saying, I'm going to put it on you, Jim, and ask you to see if you can put together something that's meaningful for us to sit down with them and look at what's there. I mean, present us with what's up there. Either make the maps or something, but get something physical for us to look at. And I'd be happy to go, and I'm sure John would too, to meet with him. And so,
I have worked with these two before, so I'd be happy to do that.
I'd be happy.
It won't be a runaway faucet.
I'm a very big supporter of keeping that line.
So let's see if you can't put them together
and either
meet between now and the October meeting or now in the November meeting.
There's so many benefits to it.
We need those local jobs. You know, I want my one grandson's a firefighter. He's up in Bend right now. He wants to come back here. And one's in the Air Force. He wants to come home and, you know, have his house and fight fires in the county.
Well, and then Inslee's bill that just passed is saying that they're going to force people, well, it results in forcing people to not drive on the road, to, you know, the miles. And when Battleground did their study on how many people commute out of Battleground or how many jobs are in Battleground, 90% of them were commuting out. And I don't understand why Battleground is not supportive of this, because it would make so much difference to their tax base and all of these things. I'm a little confused. You know, the sky is not falling for these people. There are ways, you know, there are ways to buffer it. There are ways to put it in code so that it protects these people's concerns. And I don't see any of that happening.
There's just a lot of people are vociferous about not having the noisy cars and everything. But I don't know if you know anything about the golf course down there, but the old driving range, they built, 20 houses right along the railroad tracks, but the realtors all told them that railroad's going to disappear, it's going to be trails.
We saw that. We were on the maps today. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were literally on there for hours looking at, you know, the small parcels up in Yakult, the housing, little housing developments, really nice, and what's gone on at Cedars. We were all over.
It's just a shame to see the Cedars just fall apart. Yeah. My husband, when we were operating a D7 cat and building roads, he built all the greens on the Cedars golf course. Jerry James thought he was the only one who could do it. So, anyways, you know, that was one of our bigger jobs. But, you know, I mean, this is an opportunity that this county simply can't lose.
Okay, well, let's see if we, Jim can pull together something, and we'll meet and, well, I mean, just pull as much information as you can together, and then we'll meet at some point, just a small group, and see if it makes sense for us to really jump into it wholeheartedly.
Yeah. So, since Randy has showed up, do you want to get his report before we go?
Sure.
Oh, sorry about being late. I didn't see that we moved, and then there was a car on fire on the 205. The sign said switch over to the 5, and then there was a wreck on the 5 bridge.
Your
and
excuse,
I went to the old place.
Your excuse for being late isn't as good as mine.
I left Home Depot at 3:30.
Yeah, but thinking, he was bleeding.
Yeah, no problem getting here. Yeah, no, I didn't know if I'd known it would have been here, but it's a cake. But anyway, as far as what's going on, we ran this last weekend. We're in fire season, so I was doing fire patrol. We have a fair pasture count. We get a lot of activity, people wanting to buy tickets in advance. I'm meeting Thursday with RailWorks. They're going to start delivering stuff to Yakult. So I'll be up there with them. And so they're going to use our yard. There's a back area, I call it the back 40, you know, where you guys have your festival and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, they're going to stack stuff out there, the timbers and stuff. I think we're just getting a little bit of stuff this week. I think it's for Bridge 6.
Somebody brought in 800 ton of rock and gave permission to park in the thing.
They brought rock already? Because as of when I talked to the guy Friday, he hadn't bought any rock yet. So, well, there's two.
I got a hell of a pile.
There's two groups at RailWorks.
Oh.
There's guys that are working on different bridges, and the guys that are doing the restoration a Bridge 25 and the rock slide area are local. They're not out of different places in the country.
Oh.
So, yeah, that makes a difference. And they're all apparently good.
I know it is, because they said railroad. I figured it was you, so I said, go ahead.
Where'd you put it?
Rec Park.
Huh?
Rec Park.
Oh, okay. Oh, behind the baseball field?
No, Rec Park, where the dog park is. Up by the satellite dishes.
Oh.
I gave him that one whole side of the parking lot, and he must have that gravel 12 feet tall.
See,
the whole length of it.
And I didn't know a thing about it. I told him where.
Said railroad. I said, oh, yeah, for Randy, no problem. You can put it here.
And I told him where to buy it, because he was going to have it shipped in from some other place in the country. I said, no, you get it from Stordahl's. You know, they have railroad ballast. But anyway, the work's supposed to start on that. Hopefully we'll get it done. That'll get our ticket prices back, as we're doing short run, we're doing lower ticket prices. But we're still getting good penetration. I know Jerry was conductor this weekend. What did you have what was your counts running?
We had 48 and 33 on Saturday, and then Sunday we had 82 and 51.
And that's good for this time of year.
82 is a full train.
Yeah, well, because we're running the short train. We're running two cabooses and a ramp car. And that's it.
And they took one.
So that's the capacity of roughly 100 seats. So once we get the work done, our volunteers have been redoing the big coach. It's all done. And then they're going to get the other excursion car. They're almost done with that. We'll go back to full capacity where Jerry can handle a couple hundred people at Christmas time.
Yay.
Bring them up to see Santa. I got my red uniforms all ready to go.
My son still remembers that.
You're not growing your white beard yet?
Yeah, it's. I had it. My girlfriend washed it for me. That's a horrible thing. God, it gets in your mouth, and you have to be nice, and you can't fix it while you got it on.
Have to be nice.
Yeah. Here, kid, hold my beard for a second.
Well, I got him to pull on it and try to look behind it, you know. But anyway, that's what's going on. We're doing a lot of doing track work up at the shop. Will Pickering sent me a message, said they've done 106 ties up there, trying to get that ready. You know, Eric asked for us to get some certain areas ready. But obviously, since he kind of irritated a few people, that's kind of slowed down a little bit.
Well, there was a complaint that I got from the authorities that county staff is letting grants go by that they could be applying for this railroad. And so the next I saw was that $3.5 million was allowed up on the transportation for to replace the tracks themselves all the way up to.
Well, that won't cover it. You're looking $1 million a mile to fix that track. Yes. The track is good from Vancouver to Battleground. That track has all been done. Eric's done that. After you get outside of Battleground, it wasn't used for commercial. So basically, right outside of Battleground is Bridge 18. That's in a swamp. They're ripping that completely out, redoing that. And Heisen is 18.7. On up, as you go up, none of that track has been taken care of for a commercial basis. The only really good section is from Heisen to Hantwick Road. That track in there is pretty good because we don't use it. It was all redone, and we don't use it.
Oh.
But yeah, you get the problem, you get the alder trees drop the leaves, you know, because they grow into the right-of-way. Mm-hmm. They drop the leaves, it clogs the ballast doesn't drain, it stays wet, and then the worms come up into the ties, and then we call them Westwood ties. Because you thump on them and they're hollow like a watermelon. Yeah. And they fall apart.
Well, so essentially up to Heisen, you have all good line.
Up to Battleground.
Up to Battleground.
Yeah, they didn't go past Anderson Dairy, so there was no reason to work past Anderson Dairy.
Yeah, it's nothing happens between Battleground and Heisen.
Yeah.
And your disconnect is somewhere in between there, right?
The derail is just at Heisen's store on the opposite side where the wreck was, you know.
On the south, I call it south side.
Yeah, I guess it'd be the south
side of Heisen.
It's a railroad west side of Heisen's store.
Okay.
If you want to go do it that way. Railroad west, that's how, Cahill would call it. He did everything railroad directions. Mm-hmm. But that's where it is. I know because I almost hit it with my speeder one day. It was covered up in brush. And
that would have been a slight jolt for you.
Well, the bad thing was my passenger was a BN engineer.
Uh-oh.
He didn't see it either. And we were just out joyriding, you know. So anyway.
All right.
Yeah, that's all. If anybody have any questions? Yeah.
Well, there's 110 acres just past where you're talking about. Those people are waiting for that train, for the commercial train. They will not sell that property to anyone else unless it's going to be used.
So that would be on the Battleground side of Heisen?
It's north of,
Battleground Lake.
By Battleground Lake. It's 110 acres that they own there. And they have a reversionary deed. They're not giving it up, and they insist. In fact, every once in a while I give her a report on how it's going. Because they're really anxious. They've already bought other property they're going to put a home on that they're going to, you know. But they do not want that to be used for anything than jobs.
I was told by the railworks, local railworks guys out of Centralia, I guess that's where they're out of, that they've been asked to look at the Heisen auto accident repair and do that as a change order. So that we'll get that track fixed where that car accident was.
Yeah.
That's been, 3 years now, I guess, since that happened. Somebody passed somebody else and launched a pickup truck into the tracks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Public comment?
Yeah, ask for the public. Any comments?
Anybody online have any public comments? If so, go ahead and, comment in the chat or unmute yourself if you can.
Raise your hand.
You could raise your hand. It doesn't look like there's many left. All right, we'll move on into the room. Anybody here?
Any comments? Anything for the good of the order? Yes, go ahead. Would anybody up north object to the passenger trains running up that far? If we get the track upgraded? And passengers all the way up there, and then
I think they would probably be very supportive of it, but they do not support the light rail.
We'll weave that into the discussion that we have about development of further up, because passenger train is on our agenda, but it's far down the agenda because we got to get some other things fixed before we can even think about passenger train.
Yeah, light rail wouldn't work.
No, and they absolutely do not want any light rail, and they're a little concerned. Few of them would say, well, the one that has 180 acres, I was talking to her, and she said that, she says, well, are they planning on putting a light rail up in there? And I says, no, I absolutely not, I'm sure not. It'd
be heavy rail, a lead car.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else? Anybody else?
Move to adjourn.
I hear a motion for adjournment.
I do.
You do what?
I move that we adjourn.
I'll second that, John.
Third and fourth.
Okay. Anybody opposed to adjournment? Okay, we're adjourned.
So is the next meeting going to be here?
I think Jim wanted to talk.
No, I think we're going back to the same location. Thanks, everyone, for joining online.
They're going to be done.